On this week's episode of the Wealth Collective podcast, we take a look at intergenerational wealth transfers and end-of-life planning, making sure that when you pass your wealth on to the next generation, that it goes there in the most efficient way possible. Enjoy!
Everything we talk about on today's podcast is general advice only because we don't know your individual personal situation. Before you act on anything we've spoken about, you should chat to your financial advisor, and if you don't have one, feel free to reach out to us. Now, on to today's show.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Wealth Collective podcast. It's Pete Pennicott here, joined by my co-host, as always, Zach Masters. How are you doing?
Very good, Pete. How are you going?
Hey, spring is here. We're finally arrived.
I know. It's not a bad day today, but I think this weekend's meant to be 13 and raining each day.
Oh, I've been making the most of it. Come on.
Yeah, so. Footy finals have started.
What a week. What a week of footy finals. It's out in the backyard doing some things. Basketball court's going in. So very excited about what springtime is going
to
bring.
Ready to go.
Oh, not yet. The rain's going to sort of put a bit of a damper on the plans. But we're not here to talk about what we're doing, the weather, as always. We always get sidetracked with these sort of things. You wanted to talk about what happens when we need to plan for the inevitable.
Yep.
When we meet our maker. So I don't know how you want to put it. When we die.
One of the three constants in life.
Yeah. When we die or lose capacity, you wanted to talk about that sort of planning. So end of life and intergenerational wealth transfer.
Yeah.
So what sparked this for you? What got you thinking about this? You're a young man, so...
I've recently gone through it with a family member that's passed away. So I'm the executor of that estate. So you kind of start to see... if there's things that if you had more time, what would you have done or what could we have done? And it's not like baby boomers are going to pass on a large amount of wealth to the next generation.
Mm.
So there was a study done, which was the first of its kind around wealth transfers in Australia. The Productivity Commission did it late last year. So they said baby boomers will pass on an estimated $224 billion each year in inheritances by 2050. So that's mainly because there's record housing, super wealth, and fewer heirs. So there's lower fertility rates in Australia as well. So less people to inherit.
Get active, Australians. Come on.
It's going to create a 3.5 trillion bonanza for younger generations.
Maybe we might need to revise these for the high level of inflation we're experiencing
at the moment.
But still, a lot of money.
Yeah, so it's going to be a lot of money. So what can you do to make that money go further? Because the likelihood is that now... more than in the past, is that people are passing on, quite a bit of wealth when they pass away. People are obviously living longer, so gone are the days where you think that you'll get an inheritance at, the 20s, 30s.
Well, you really hope the average you don't,
age is in there. Yeah, you never hope to get it, but it's usually the ages are now in the 50s or 60s.
Okay.
More so. So that's something to think about. So what we thought we'd talk about is ways to get prepared for that intergenerational wealth transfer, because there are a lot of different strategies and things that you can put in place that will potentially make each dollar go further. So we might start with the first one, which is just getting your estate planning sorted and in order.
Yeah, and just like I think understanding what it is, like what goes into an estate plan is pretty pivotal.
Yeah, so obviously the most basic part of the estate plan is the getting the will sorted, meeting with a lawyer to get that done. So obviously if you don't have a will, you die in what's called intestate, so die in intestacy, and the intestacy laws are what you're governed by, so that can just create more problems for those that are left behind. It also doesn't necessarily mean that your wishes would be followed through, Pete.
And it's not even consistent across Australia, so it's state or territory based as well, so you really need to be careful about where you're domiciled. Important to know. I think the other key one that trips a fair few people up, because it's not obvious, is what is an estate asset versus a non-estate asset?
Yeah.
So estate assets are really things that are owned in your personal name. So you think of that as going individually owned bank accounts, term deposit shares, other investments, so property, your interests in a trust or companies as well. Any ownerships that are tenants in common, so not jointly owned assets. Because jointly owned assets, non-estate, will flow through survivorship straight to whoever else you own that with.
Yep.
So if there's jointly owned shares or a property that you own with a spouse or a sibling or a friend, that'll just flow through straight away. So it won't even go through your estate. So it'll bypass it.
And that's important to know, because there might be some people that might own a property with their, you know, brother or sister or whatnot and have a partner, and that's not necessarily what they want to happen.
Very common. So sort of a little bit of a surprise, and you sort of don't want that surprise to be after you're gone, or maybe you do. But ideally, you sort of want to get that out on the table, because people sometimes think their estate is a lot bigger than it is.
Yeah.
And you think about the biggest asset outside of the family home, superannuation, for most people,
yep,
is not an estate asset. So it's a non-estate asset. It's dealt with through your death nominations or sort of the rules of the fund, depending on what sort of fund you've got. So that's the big one. So that sort of trips a lot of people up. The other thing is that joint tenancy that we spoke about before, and also any assets you've got in a family trust. So any trust assets are not directly owned either. You can pass control of those via your estate, and you can direct your superannuation proceeds to your estate, but doesn't automatically go there.
Yeah. And even with the nominations that you put on the your super account, you've still got to be bound by the trustee, or the trustee decides at the time as well, which is important to note, because a lot of people sometimes end up putting someone that's won't actually get the funds at the end of the day. So what are examples of that, Pete?
What's that?
What are examples of that? So parents, sometimes people put parents on there when they're not, parents. The parents aren't dependent on them.
Siblings aren't. Siblings. To have no interdependency relationship.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do people always nominate you? Or it's because you're such a nice bloke when they see you out?
That's it.
Yeah, but they're the common ones. And I think you just need to make sure, like, is it valid? And if it's not, get it updated. Yep. And if you're not really sure about where it should go and you have a will that you think meets your wishes, because it's all about just making sure the right amount of the money flows to the right people, the people you intended it to, with minimal amount of tax possible. And then I guess overlaying that with sort of control as well of going, you know, sometimes you have to give up a bit of tax benefit to get, you know, much more certainty about who, how it gets there and who it goes to.
Yeah. So tax is an interesting point, because a lot of people are unaware of the super death tax, the tax payable on a death benefit. And this can be quite significant, especially on what an average super balance is today, Pete.
Yeah. So, you know, in superannuation, it, death benefits tax on the taxable components, that's any money you've got a tax benefit to put money into super. So it might be your superannuation guarantee payments, which is a fair chunk of most people's.
Yep.
Also personal deductible contributions or concessional contributions.
It's again, a large part of what most people would have inside.
Yeah, not, and it's going to be different for everyone, but you're talking about it's taxed at 15% on those components. Could be as high as 30%.
Yeah.
Plus the Medicare levy, which is 2% currently. So on $1 million, that's $170,000.
Yeah.
So
that's a huge amount.
Fair chunk of change. So people don't realize they've got, oh, I've got my family as my beneficiaries. I forgot about the ATO. They're sitting there, waiting, got their hands out, waiting to collect. And yeah, we do need taxes to be, you know, received to keep our hospitals, our roads, all these infrastructure going.
Yep.
Paying for all the these parties that they have in Canberra. But you can minimize that. So there's strategies you can put in place. So with a bit of planning, and the good thing is superannuation legislation has given us more opportunity to get money recycled in through super.
Yeah, so one of the common ones of doing that is a recontribution strategy.
Yeah, and I think we've spoken about that in pretty a lot of depth, but that's one of the strategies there. But ultimately, you just got to work out, like, who do you want your money to get to? How? So yeah, I think that would be my big takeaway, like really understand those estate and non-estate assets. And probably the other one, which we come across quite a bit, which is a non-estate asset, is superannuation that's owned personally as well.
Yep.
So you can actually nominate who that goes to directly.
Right. The other strategy that a lot of people look at, if they get, you know, warning that they are about to pass away, long, you know, if you get a terminal illness or something along those lines, is potentially the withdrawal of super as well. So withdrawing the super and getting it out. And then obviously it's formed, it goes into the estate, but it's you save on that 15%. Tax as well, depending on what age you're at and your situation. But that's what a lot of people can look to do as well. Is there anything else on the super side that you'd get people to think about?
No, I think, like, that's the main thing. Going, like, understand what your rules are of accessing your super benefits. So if you can get it tax effectively, you have certainty, like, in terms of your time frame of when you're exiting planet Earth.
Yeah.
well, you may take some proactive action. Like, you know, get advice with this, though. Don't be flippant. Don't be sort of, you know, guessing. Because what you don't want is take it all out. We've got millions of dollars sitting in your personal name, starting to incur
tax,
you know, personal income tax, yep, capital gains tax. So I think that's important. But tax planning is part of it. Like, you might say, look at it and go, okay, I'm X age. So yep, this is the time where I start to really think about where should my assets be held to best place them to benefit my estate plan. Yep. And you might go, bugger, I'm going to spend it all. That's fine as well.
Yep.
But if you are planning to transfer quite a bit of wealth, you might look to start triggering capital gains in your personal name, using up your you know, tax-free threshold, low marginal tax rate, to get some benefit. So then, because ultimately your beneficiaries for personally owned assets are going to inherit your cost base.
Yep.
So I think there can be some proactive actions that take place where you can, you know, it's not about evading tax, but it is sort of trying to manage that for the betterment of your portfolio and leaving you in the best possible position. So I would definitely be looking at that as early on as you can.
Yeah.
So that might be moving structures and going, actually, a trust I think would benefit for my family. So that might be something you can establish in your lifetime. And that's probably a good segue. Estate planning doesn't need to be always upon death. You can start to do it while you're still here and see the benefit of it. But just bear in mind, you're going to be liable for the tax implications. So whether or not you want to do that, you know, how much is those smiles going to, you know,
be worth? Well, that is worth it. A lot of people look at early gifting is now a common thing that you see. So that's where you're potentially gifting an inheritance earlier than, so you're still alive. And a lot of people like doing this because they potentially get to see their money at work. So if it's helping a loved one with the first home purchase or whatever it might be, you know, private school fees for grandchildren or all that type of stuff, is ones that some people like to look at. There's obviously Centrelink implications of this. If you are receiving Centrelink or you're trying to do it so that you get your funds down to receive Centrelink, there's gifting implications of that. But first off, you've also always got to make sure that you've got enough funds for your own goals before you look to do this. But is this something that you see or are seeing more of, Pete?
Well, it's a mixed bag. I think, yeah, it is a real personal thing. And I think those with the means are doing it when they say, okay, there's an opportunity here. I'm very, very confident. I imagine that's been shaken a little bit by 2020.
Inflation.
2022.
Yeah.
You know, a lot drops of volatility. Like, markets, yeah, come down. You go, okay, maybe I'm rethinking. Like, am I as secure as what I thought?
Yeah.
My costs have gone up substantially. At the same time, my wealth has shrunk. And we might not be at the end of it just yet. So I think that's definitely something to consider. And I think probably the big thing is when you are drafting these documents, because it is documents, it's not like you need to think about what you want to do. So you need to really jot down, think long and hard about who do you want to put in very important roles, such as executor.
Yeah.
Is that going to cause any tension in your family? So do you appoint multiple people to that role? If it's really dicey in terms of your personal family situation, do you appoint a professional,
yep,
to sort of take on that role for a fee? Obviously, there's a cost involved, but it might be more impartial and you feel like it might get the outcome achieved that you want to, or at least give it a better chance of happening. Because crazy things happen.
Yeah, when money executor holds a fair bit of power once you are gone as well,
in, yeah, terms
of the control of all the assets, depending on obviously how you've written the will and whatnot. Yeah. But
yeah, so I think that'd be a big one. And so make sure you get advice. Go see a solicitor, someone experienced in this. If you do have over like $1 million in assets, I think a testamentary trust is one that you might.
Yeah, so do you want to run us through what that is?
Well, just it's a trust that's the option is created upon death for,
yep,
your beneficiaries to create a trust. You couldn't put multiple beneficiaries in there. You could create them individually. So basically, as part of your will, you've got a trust deed. So that sets out the terms of the trust. And what it has is some pretty material tax benefits. So especially if there's minors involved, so you can look to keep money in the family bloodline longer, distribute to minors, so people under 18 years old,
mm-hmm,
and still get the adult tax rate. So so that's the tax-free threshold, which is pretty attractive,
yep,
especially if someone is keeping up the birth rate and they've got a fair few kids under 18. They're probably going to need all the help they can get to pay for school fees, uniforms, eat you out of house and home. I'm just venting now. So,
you're about to cop all those fees coming up.
Well, Absolutely worth it. Best investment I've ever made. So I think that's important. And I don't know, probably like now that we're speaking about children, you know, guardianship. Yeah. This is probably the one that makes people drag their feet quite a bit.
Yeah. But it is like really hard. It's also the one that if you don't get it done and something happens, is the one that could cause the most fuss a lot of the time, potentially. If you've passed away and you've left behind minors without a guardianship provision written out, there may be people fighting over them or different things like that, which is not a scenario that you want either.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of Hollywood movies where the cool aunt inherits them and you know, chaos ensues, but life isn't always so serendipity. So I think that is really a big one, and don't let it stop you. Like, you've got to have the conversation.
Make sure you let the people know who you nominate as well.
Yeah. Well, ideally. And probably the main thing is make sure they're not going to be left in a difficult financial position. So that is the insurances. Making sure there is enough assets to make sure your household is still financially secure after you're gone.
Yeah.
And plan for the worst. If you're part of a couple, you plan for what if both of us are gone?
Yeah.
If you're single, okay, well, you plan, what does it look like if I'm gone? Like, what do I want to happen? And it's as simple and as complex as that.
Yeah. Is there anything else that you think we need to mention when we're talking about intergenerational wealth transfer or end-of-life planning?
I think with intergenerational wealth transfer, it's like having a conversation. How rude of me.
Your phone's gone.
Excuse me.
Busy.
It was just a Twitter update as well. So it's probably just telling me how much my mortgage has gone
up. Yeah, what's the
RBA increase? By 0.5%. So thanks, RBA. So yeah, I think that's something you do want to keep in check as well.
Yeah, very good. Well, I think that pretty much wraps us up on today's episode. So as always, if you've got any questions, email us at connect@picarda.com.au. Otherwise, we'll see you next week. Thanks, Pete.
Thank you.